This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Dr. John Hewson, you will recall, was once upon a time the leader of the Parliamentary Liberal Party. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks.
Great to have you on the air again. You've become a regular on Joy, and it's great to actually have you here.
No problem. I'm happy to support you.
We noticed that yesterday you wrote a fairly interesting piece that was published in The Age here in Melbourne, and you were fairly critical of the federal government. Can you just give us an outline as to why you did that?
Well, I write a regular column now for the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, Canberra Times and so on, and, I come from a personal frustration. I mean, I spent a lot of time in politics as an advisor in the Fraser years, chief of staff and so on, then as a member of parliament and, as you said, a leader, really focused on trying to get good government and good policy. And today, of course, what we get is, endless political games. It's just taken 18 months to get a backpacker tax. Nobody once mentioned it. Principle, a tax principle, was all about scoring short-term political points on the other side, opportunistic, negative most of the time. And so basically the bigger issues are being left adrift while there's all this distraction in terms of, and it doesn't really matter what's been run over the last, just think of the period since the last election. I mean, the Turnbull government has been really trying to wedge the opposition has been trying to wedge the Turnbull government and scoring points on each other, not solving problems.
In fairness, that is the opposition's role, though. The opposition's role is to try to wedge the government of the day.
No, not necessarily. I mean, I wasn't all that successful as leader of the opposition, but because I lost an election. But I took the view that our role, when you disagree on a matter of principle or policy, of course you argue the case, but you also have a role in terms of setting the agenda and trying to make it easier for the government to deliver some policy outcomes. And so we argued for commitments to the Gulf War or raising interest rates or cutting protection or all sorts of things. It made it easier for the government to come in behind and do that. But of course, when my old press secretary, Tony Abbott, became leader, he just opposed everything. But what was called the politics of nope, I think, at the time, rather than the politics of hope. And that was done a lot of damage to the public debate about issues. Issues just somebody opposes today, the other side mostly opposes, and that's it. Move on to another day, another subject, another location.
So I'm struggling to actually understand what this government's agenda is at the moment. Are you able to enlighten us at all?
Well, if you ask them, of course, they'll say they're implementing their agenda because they've got those two pieces of industrial relations legislation finally through the parliament after years of trying with various parliaments and various senates. But to the average voter, I don't think that's sort of, it's a beltway issue. They don't sort of focus on the significance of any of that. I'd like to see them doing something about education, health, climate, tax, some of the bigger issues that are sitting out there. And if you look at the government today, they'd say, oh, well, we're going to move now on to the corporate tax cuts. And they don't have much support for that in the broader community in the parliamentary process. So I don't know. One of the comments I made yesterday is I don't think you can understand that they've got an agenda for 2017.
Let alone a vision for what our country should look like and where it should be going over the next.
It's a longer term view. Politics today is incredibly short term, sort of winning the 24-hour media cycle by scoring points on the other side. But we should be taking 5, 10, 15, 20 year view. I mean, something like climate change, where you're changing behaviour, changing the industrial base of the economy and so on. That's, you need objectives out to the 2040s or 2050s and be working to them day in, day out over that period. And it takes time to develop the policies and to implement them. But if you have a debate there, you have a blackout in South Australia and immediately the government comes out and blames renewable energy, even though it was not renewables. I mean, the transmission system went down, so it wouldn't matter whether it was coal-fired or gas-fired or wind or solar-fired power. I mean, you couldn't distribute it because the transmission system was down. And yet they're out there scoring political points against Labor states that have got renewable energy targets for 2025 or 2030 or 2050 or whatever. So, I mean, it's just a very frustrating process where there's no genuine, as you say, vision, but there's no genuine strategy in a short to medium term.
Hi, John. It's Shannon here. I'd like to hear from you. What do you think the government's agenda should be for 2017 and for this particular term of government? What should their priorities be?
Well, I think the big challenges as they sit today are budget care. I mean, the rating agencies are telling us if you don't put down a substantial policy response and demonstrate how we can bring the budget under control by the end of this decade, then, of course, they downgrade our credit ratings. And that's a difficult decision. It involves not only targeting expenditure better, but obviously working on the tax and revenue side as well. I think climate is a very big issue. I spent a lot of time arguing for a substantive response to climate change since the early 90s when I had a policy that nobody read, but it called for 20% cut in emissions by the year 2000 off a 1990 base. We don't have anything. We don't have an explanation of 2020's target yet. It'll have 2030 where we've committed under Paris to the 26 to 28% reduction. They're fighting against renewables where you have to make a transition from coal and gas-fired power to renewable energy over that time. So, you know, these are big issues. They require, you know, you just step out of the day-to-day political contest and to start governing and, working strategically and governing to solve problems and to move the country forward. But they're just two examples. Go into education, go into health, go into infrastructure. A lot of that infrastructure is grinding to a halt, not just roads, ports and so on. But, you know, I think a lot of it, aged care infrastructure, health infrastructure, schools, it all needs a lot of attention and it's all just being left to drift.
So, you suggest that the government is just trying to point score against the opposition. They're more concerned about sound bites and getting attention in this 24-hour media cycle. What strategy would you advise them to adopt, or how would you like to see them actually transition into governing and implementing these ideas and implementing policy?
Well, people are looking for leadership. I mean, when Malcolm Turnbull rolled Tony Abbott, he came in with enormous expectations because people believed that he did actually believe in climate change and tax reform and in same-sex marriage and whatever it was. You know, people had high expectations. I think they would have put in a lot of slack if he'd just gone on and done that. And, of course, what's happened is he's had the most significant and rapid decline in his poll standing in our history, I think. He's gone from captain hero to captain zero pretty quickly. And, that's affected a lot of people's expectations of government. So the only way he can break out of that, I think, is to go back in and say, look, the two or three things I really want to do, they're longer-term structural issues, challenge the opposition to support them. I mean, we've got bipartisan support on national security. I don't know why we don't have it on climate. Because the significance of climate and the challenge which runs out over decades will outlive all these blokes, all these politicians, male or female, whatever, in that period. So, I mean, you should be trying to marshal bipartisan support, at least on the bigger issues. You know, and the same, you could say the same for key reforms in the health sector or tax system. But, I mean, whatever it is, somebody opposes immediately when you put a proposal forward. But I think the only way for Malcolm to get credibility back is to set out a medium-term agenda, two or three key things he wants to do, and then just get on and do it. So I'm stepping out of this media cycle. I'm not playing the game anymore. Give up wedging the opposition because, you know, they've got nowhere to go. They're going in the end be dragged into responding. I challenge them.
John, I'm struggling to hear you say anything positive at all about this current government.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, if you look at it from their point of view, they struggled to get those two industrial oceans bills through. So, yes, that's a plus. You know, don't get me wrong, I did lose an election arguing a similar case.
So, what's happened to Turnbull? What's happened to Turnbull?
And what can he do to fix it?
I personally don't think he ever believed the positions that people attributed him to. I think there were positions he'd taken to in the past. If you look when he took the support of tax reform, was really to undermine Costello when he supported some of the climate change things and was working against other leaders. And so he was just, on the plebiscite, he opposed the plebiscite on the basis that Abbott proposed the plebiscite. You know, he was positioning himself in a leadership contest. And, you know, knowing Malcolm over many years, he's only ever wanted to be Prime Minister. In my mind, he didn't come with a personal policy agenda.
So he's interested in the profile that's attached to that and the sense of importance rather than really leading and developing a vision for the nation about where it might go politically, socially, economically, etc.
That's right. If he could get the electorate to sign off on a vision, then all the political players would be under a lot of pressure to come in behind that. But you've got to be prepared to get out there and argue the case, you know, and identify what it is and get out and defend it over and over. You know, Peacock used to say to me, you know, just keep saying it and just keep repeating it. You might say it 5,000 times, you might say it 10,000 times. One day somebody will stop you in the street, tap you on the shoulder and say, what about? You say, now there's a good idea. You have to do that. You have to work long and hard in an education sense.
Of course, you've got to stick to message and we see some politicians do that extremely well. I mean, I have to say at a personal level, I'm struggling to see what Turnbull has actually delivered for our nation in the time that he has been our leader. But it seems to me that he's been pretty much hamstrung by the factions within his own parliamentary party. Do you have any reflections on the hard right in particular? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, look, I think he's given them a life. I mean, it is a management issue. You have to pull them into line and he's let them go. And so, you know, he's let the National Party go and run its own agenda. He's let some of those hardline right types get out there and carve out a niche. I mean, it's a control issue from his point of view. He's got to pull them into line. But if you let them go, you let a George Christensen call a press conference and tell everybody how he just rolled the party room, or Barnaby Joyce to speak out on war when you're trying to negotiate with Xenophon, or, you know, you live with the consequences of those bad calls. And I think it's a management issue. He has to get much closer to the backbench. He has to work much closer with them. He's trying to work with the Senate. Okay, he got those legislation through, but he paid a pretty big price in terms of the extent to which he watered it down in order to get it through. And I know they're saying 70% of something is better than 100% of nothing, but, you know, in terms of that ABCC legislation, the Building and Construction Commission, then there's a two-year waiting period now. So it's quite possible we'll never see that, because if there's a change of government, the Labor Party will abolish it. And, you know, so it's sort of a Pyrrhic victory, if you like.
So, John, we're almost out of time, but I'd like to ask you your personal views on marriage equality and also 18C. Do you have a personal view about both of those issues?
Well, look, on marriage equality, I've supported just a parliamentary conscience vote right from the beginning. I don't understand why they don't do that. They haven't done that.
Well, we all know why they haven't.
Just on, well, you know, but they're playing politics, coming up with a plebiscite as, you know, the one alternative nobody else thought of, in order to delay the whole process and hopefully roll it. Now, on 18C, I mean, I think if you were drafting 18C today, you'd use different words. But it's not the time to actually contemplate changing that in any significant way at this point, because, you know, we're trying to get the cooperation, for example, of the Islamic community in relation to response to national security issues and terrorism and so on. They don't want to put them offside, start a divisive vote. And I think what worried me about the plebiscite, what worries me about some of the stuff on 18C, is they've become issues where you can drive division, and you will drive really serious division in our society if you do that. So on 18C, I think the timing's wrong, and on the plebiscite, I think it's just an incredible waste of time and money.
Dr. John Hewson, thank you very much for your time. It's been great to speak with you, and thank you for sharing some of your thoughts with us and with our listeners. One of our listeners has been particularly pleased with what you've been saying this morning. He does say, and I quote, "Why is it when Liberals leave Parliament they begin to make sense? He," meaning yourself, "and Malcolm Fraser have seen the light on the hill. It's dark and depressing." Thank you very much for your time. You're listening to Saturday Magazine.
I think I did it in politics. That's why I was. Talk to you later.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.